Hi, my name is Billy, and today I'll be reading you the Lynn Daily Item for the Talking Information Center. This version of the Lynn Daily Item comes from Tuesday, December 23rd, 2025. And over to our first article, Old Neighborhood Meets a Need in Lynn Schools. For the second year in a row, just before the holidays, Old Neighborhood Foods and Makes Enterprises donated nearly 10,000 pounds of their famous meat products to families and staff at the Washington STEM Elementary and Robert L. Ford Elementary Schools. The distributions took place on December 17th to December 18th as part of United Way's Community Schools initiatives. Each family received a 10-pound box that included cold cuts, sausages, and hot dogs. The community school strategy integrates academics, health, and social supports through strong partnerships between schools, families, and local organizations. Across Massachusetts, this model is helping communities improve attendance, address chronic absenteeism, support mental health, and strengthen family engagement. Lynn's Ford and Washington STEM schools are shining examples of what public schools and community partnerships can do to lift families. They are doing wonderful things at these schools, said Tom DeMakes, Old Neighborhood Foods owner. It makes you feel like you've done some good, and that means a lot. Superintendent of Schools Molly Cohen said, "We appreciate the partnership of the United Way with the Community Schools Initiatives and the ongoing generosity of Mr. DeMakes and Old Neighborhood." Amy Trinak, Ford's Community Schools Coordinator, said, "To be able to fill these gaps and give families food to take home for long holiday breaks feels really great, especially in a time when parents are experiencing reductions in benefits." Marty Martinez, President and CEO of United Way of Massachusetts Bay, says, "Partnerships like these show how community schools are helping to meet student needs so they can grow, learn, and thrive. We are grateful to DeMakes' Enterprises and Old Neighborhood Foods for helping to ensure families who are already struggling with rising costs of housing, heat, and more can make healthy meals over the holiday break." And over to our next article. Nahant swears in first woman administrator. This was written by Amanda Laurie. From Nahant, to mark the occasion of becoming the first woman in the town's history to be sworn in as town administrator, Allison Nido wore a vibrant pink dress to her ceremony on Monday. "I think it's very historic to be the first female town administrator here," Nido said. "While there have been female town administrators all over, for it to be here, it's a pretty historic thing, and I'm glad to be part of it." As Nido swore her oath to faithfully and impartially perform all necessary duties, the approximately 30 attendees, made up of family, friends, and former and current town staff, beamed with pride, later erupting into an incredibly genuine round of applause. Nido began her remarks of reminding all those in attendance that she had no intention of becoming town administrator. "I think I told everybody that, but when my predecessor, Tony Barletta, was leaving, he talked me into it," she said candidly. "I had been a finance director for almost 10 years now, and I enjoyed that role. I just really loved Nahant. I grew up here. My parents still live here. I just wanted to continue to work with the staff that's here, that's really dedicated to this town. That was important to me. So that's the reason why I threw my hat in the ring, and I made it this far." Barletta then took a moment to recognize and congratulate his successor. "I just want to take the opportunity to say how incredibly proud I am of Allison and thankful to Allison. The truth is, she's been running the town of Nahant for the last 4 years now," Barletta said, earning some chuckles throughout the room. "Throughout my career here, since Allison joined our team, She has been right there, helping me get through whatever challenge has come forward. He continued, "She's always the first call that I made because I knew she had the right advice to give. She knew it by instinct, and that's why, when the opportunity came about, it wasn't a choice, Allison, by default situation. It was that I knew she would do really well in this position. She had the right mindset for it." Barletta also pointed out that, once again, Nahant is being led by a hometown person. Nito ensured everyone was aware that her mother, Patricia McDonald, brought a spread of food with shrimp cocktails, sandwiches, chips, and more to Downtown Hall for the celebration. I said to her, "Should we do finger sandwiches?" And she said no, so naturally I did finger sandwiches, MacDonald said with a laugh. And like any good mom, MacDonald couldn't help herself from bragging about her kid. "I think there's no flies on my daughter," she said. "I think she worked hard and has been doing two jobs for about 6 months now, and she seems to have handled it so far." Nito's aunt, Deborah Murphy, who was also the town's public health nurse, said she was surprised it took this long for a woman to become town administrator, but she's happy it's happening now. Stressing that she is speaking professionally rather than personally, Murphy said Nito is very, very intelligent, and she is very well-liked, and she makes very thoughtful decisions. "I think she's going to be a great leader. I really do." Nito emphasized that she's just really happy to be here and to serve the town. She added, "There's really great things that are going to come along in Nahant, so stay tuned." Amanda Laurie can be reached at amanda@itemlive.com. And over to our next article, Child Staying Hopeful. This was written by Amanda Laurie. One local parent is struggling to make ends meet this holiday season, but her child remains optimistic and determined to turn their Christmas around. The child wrote to Item Santa, emphasizing that they have been very well behaved this year. The letter continues sincerely as the child reveals their mother's financial burdens while refusing to give up on the magic of Christmas. "In gratitude for my good behavior, I would like to receive gifts this Christmas. I would like to receive toys, even though my mother can't afford them because of her economic situation doesn't allow it," the child wrote. "All children deserve to open presents on Christmas morning, to experience Santa's magic and generosity." A contribution to Items Santa can help ensure this family and many others like him have something to anticipate this holiday season. Every donation counts when it comes to making a meaningful impact at a time where so many families are struggling to make ends meet. Now, in its 59th year, the Item Santa Fund helps bring Christmas joy to local residents in need. The item collects donations while the Salvation Army purchases and distributes toys and essentials to approved families in the area. To give, please clip the coupon in the daily item and send it with your check to the Item Salvation Army Santa to 85 Exchange Street, Lynn, Massachusetts, 01901. Online contributions can also be made at salvationarmyma.org/itemsanta, where donors may choose to have their names acknowledged. All donations will be printed in the item throughout December and into early 2026, with space for a brief message from donors who wish to include one. For questions regarding eligibility, gift distribution, or scheduling, contact the Salvation Army at 781-598-0673. Amanda Laura can be reached at amanda@itemlive.com. And over to our next article, A Big Milestone at Pickering. This was written by Elizabeth Della Piana. The Pickering Middle School Building Committee had a meeting full of updates as construction pushes forward on the site. Brandon Mosley, a project manager at Kongsigli Construction Company, spoke about the construction updates and progress. Photos were presented showing the remaining sections of the retaining wall footing. These are both areas where we were replacing rebar. These areas have now fully been placed. The walls in these areas have also been placed. We actually did our last large foundation wall placement, which is a big milestone for us to get ready for the steel, Mosley said. He added that almost all the soil has been removed from the site. If you look into the site now, there's a couple of piles still there that's being used to backfill some of the new foundation's walls using existing soil where we could, he said. Mosley continued that some underground conduit work was done, allowing paving in areas of the parking lot to get a head start on winter weather. He said the exterior grease trap was also delivered and installed. The exterior grease trap sits just outside the foundation footprint, buried underground, takes all the kitchen waste from any grease-producing fixture, filters through there before it goes into any sanitary system, and then that's pumped out at regular intervals. That's now done and buried, which is fantastic. It's another big underground element that we can put behind us, Mosley said. Another addition is stainless steel handrails being installed to complete ramps and stairs. Mosley touched on another milestone happening Tuesday when the first steel will be going up. Great milestone for the team on site as we've gotten kind of transitioned from site work concrete now into structural steel, he said. Elizabeth Della Piena can be reached at elizabeth@itemlive.com. And over to our next article, Swampscott Board Debates Richdale Alcohol License. This was written by Elizabeth Della Piena. At the latest Select Board meeting, a continued hearing was held on the subject of Richdale Swampscott to change its off-premise wine and malt beverages license to an off-premises all-alcohol license. Attorney Chris Drukas explained during the original hearing on December 3rd that the goal was to expand the area around the section where beer and wine are located in the rear of the store. The plan is to put some shelving behind the counter where the cash register is today, to hold pints and half pints with another row of shelving directly in front of where the wine is now, which would hold the other products, Drakus said. As of now, there are products that contain vodka that the store cannot sell under its current license, which is one of the reasons for the switch to an all-alcohol license. Drakus explained that the rear section of the store had many cameras to keep an eye on the additional alcohol. He also noted that the store would not be turning into a liquor store and would remain a convenience store. Multiple people, including neighbors, came to speak for the store and its strong reputation, while one abutter wrote in stating that there were issues in the area with noise and litter from the store. The hearing was pushed back because letters had not been sent to abutters, leading to the store to return to try to get the license at the next meeting. Select Board member Danielle Lennard began the discussion by sharing her concerns as a parent. I feel like underage drinking in our town is a thing. It's a thing maybe we don't like to talk about a lot, but neighboring towns have issues. It's almost an epidemic, I would say, in small towns, Leonard said. She said she had a bad feeling about a convenience store frequented all year by kids having more alcohol, and that her main concern was the atmosphere created in the store. We have three full-size liquor stores in a three-square-mile town. I don't think that we're lacking for places to buy liquor. It's my understanding that this license already has a beer and wine license. This is an expansion of that license. It's not that I want to cut into anybody's profit margin, but I think that at some point someone has to start talking about underage drinking in a town of our size, Leonard said. Board Chair Katie Fellin said she was uncertain if the board had the ability to deny a license based on being uncomfortable with the establishment obtaining it. She also talked about a recent experience she had at the store. I happened to walk to the store, and when my son was there with a couple of his friends, and there was two of them inside, and I said, "Why are there only two of you inside?" And he said, "We're only allowed to be two inside at a time," Fellin said. She continued that the fact that her son and his friends respected this rule spoke volumes to the management at this location and how responsible and respected they are there. I do still have the fears that Mrs. Leonard states, but I also look at your layout, and I can see that all your alcohol is in the back of the store, she said. Board member Mary Ellen Fletcher said she held similar concerns, while Vice Chair Doug Thompson said he was ready to make a motion to approve. I'm not saying that some kind couldn't go over there for sure. They can already go over there and get a beer and wine. We're talking about adding some liquor behind the cash register and at the end of a cooler. So, to me, it feels like there's a balance here. If a kid is looking to get alcohol, they are either already going to be able to get it here or somewhere else. This is a well-operated business, Thompson said. Board member David Gershom also showed his support, saying that he knows that it will be done the right way at the establishment. I would not be comfortable with my child going into a convenience store where there is a lot of displays of liquor, wine, and beer. I think those constant images don't add to a good result often, Fletcher said. After a long discussion, the board made the decision for a continuance to look into the legal framework on regulations and parameters for the license. Elizabeth Della Piena can be reached at elizabeth@itemlive.com. And over to our next article, Saugus Council Educates on Environment. This was written by Elizabeth Della Piena. The Saugus River Watershed Council has announced that it will host its annual meeting and dinner on Monday, January 26, 2026, at the marina at the Wharf in Revere. The event will include stewardship awards, silent auctions, and raffles. There will also be a keynote presentation and a wildlife slideshow from naturalist Steve Fantone. Fantone has given presentations across the North Shore highlighting the importance of native wildlife. He's an avid outdoorsman who shares his interests on his YouTube channels, Hike, Walk, Paddle, and MA Wildlife Cams. The council's mission is to protect and restore the natural resources of the Saugus River watershed. It works to improve water quality, restore river habitat and fisheries, educate students about the environment, and promote public access and enjoyment of the watershed. Through the annual meeting, the council educates people about the importance of the watershed and other environmental factors, as well as continuing its environmental advocacy. Elizabeth Della Piena can be reached at elizabeth@itemlive.com. And over to our next article, Linfield Reviews Revised Route 1 Redevelopment. This was written by Sophia Harris. The Planning Board reviewed a revised redevelopment proposal for multiple parcels on Broadway associated with the Herb Chambers Cadillac of Linfield dealership, and now under the new ownership following a landmark acquisition by Georgia-based Absbury Automotive Group. Attorney Jesse Schomer, representing the developer, appeared before the board to present the updated site plan for ZBA cases number 26 through 22, 421R, 433, 445, and 449, and 451 Broadway under Section 10.6 Site Plan Review. The proposal calls for the demolition of existing structures, including the Donovan's Liquor Store building, and the redevelopment of the site primarily for vehicle parking accessory to the adjacent auto dealership. This proposal is a little different than what you saw last year, Schomer told the board. At the time, it was proposed by the Herb Chambers Company before they were acquired by Asbury Automotive, and it was going to be a Porsche service center with accessory parking. Schomer explained that after Asbury Automotive Group completed its acquisition of most Herb Chambers dealerships earlier this year, Porsche opted not to move forward with the service center concept. When the Asbury folks came into the project, they reached out to Porsche, and unfortunately, Porsche decided they weren't interested in moving forward anymore, Schomer said. So Asbury has shifted their plans for the time being to accessory parking for the dealerships. As a result, the existing liquor store building would be razed, a change that drew some lighthearted commentary from the board. My 11-year-old son asked me as we drove by today, "What are they taking down? The liquor store?" Chair Paige Wilkins said. So now I know what to tell them. Under the revised plan, parking spaces will be reconfigured and restripped, pavement conditions improved, and new underground stormwater management systems installed. No new above-ground buildings are proposed. The limit of work is no different than the previous proposal, Schomer said. It's all within the general business district. No work is proposed in the residential district at the rear of the site, and is no closer to the wetlands than before. Concerns raised during the prior hearings, particularly about the headlight glare affecting nearby homes, were revisited. Schomer noted that parking closet closest to residential abutters would primarily be used for vehicle storage rather than daily employee parking. These are going to be storage vehicles, he said. That's anticipated to have the least amount of use, and therefore the least amount of headlight impact on the abutters. The additional screening is specifically intended to mitigate that issue. Stormwater management was a significant focus of that decision. Board members explained that the revised plan would improve existing conditions, which currently allowed untreated runoff to flow toward nearby wetlands. Director Emil Cadamori, said that right now, a lot of the water runs unabated into the wetland. She added that, with this proposal, all of it is being treated and infiltrated underground. From an environment standpoint, that's an improvement over what exists today. The board also reviewed proposed changes to curb cuts along Route 1, which would be reduced from 4 to 3. Schomer emphasized the importance of maintaining southbound access to the site. If that access isn't maintained, customers would have to drive all the way down to Saugus, make a U-turn, and come back, he said. Nearly adds 2 miles of unnecessary traffic. All curb cut modifications will require approval from MassDOT through a highway access permit. Board members also addressed public misconceptions that the site may be redeveloped for housing following the dealership sale. This parcel has not been rezoned for multifamily housing, Vice Chair Amy McNulty said. But the fact that the liquor store is coming down does not mean housing is coming next. This remains a business zone property. After discussion, the board voted unanimously not to oppose the site plan application, subject to the project obtaining the appropriate tree permit or certificate of exemption and final review by the Conservation Commission. This will go back before the Conservation in January, Cadamatori noted, and the peer reviewer will fully vet the stormwater system. From what we are seeing, it's going to be an improvement over existing conditions. The redevelopment represents one of the first local planning actions connected to Asbury Automotive Group's $1.34 billion acquisition of Herb Chambers dealership portfolio. one of the largest auto retail transactions in U.S. history. Local officials have previously expressed confidence that the transition to Fortune 500 ownership reinforces the long-term use of the Broadway property as an auto dealership, a use they view as the site's highest and best. Sophia Harris can be reached at sophia@itemlive.com. And over to our next article. 60 Minutes pulls a story about Trump deportations. This was written by David Bauder. An internal CBS News battle over a 60 Minutes story critical of the Trump administration has exploded publicly, with a correspondent charging it was kept off the air for political reasons, and News Chief Barry Weiss saying Monday the story did not advance the ball. 2 hours before airtime Sunday, CBS announced that the story, where correspondent Sharon Alfonsi spoke to deportees who have been sent to El Salvador's notorious CECOT prison, would not be a part of the show. Weiss, the Free Press founder, named CBS News editor-in-chief in October, said it was her decision. The dispute puts one of journalism's most respected brands and a frequent target of President Donald Trump back in the spotlight as he amplifies questions about whether Weiss' appointment was a signal that CBS News was headed in a more Trump-friendly direction. Alfonsi, in an email sent to fellow 60 Minutes correspondents, said the story was factually correct and had been cleared by CBS lawyers and its standards division, but the Trump administration had refused to comment for the story, and Weiss wanted a greater effort made to get their point of view. In my view, pulling it now, after every rigorous internal check has been met, is not an editorial decision. It is a political one, Alfonsi wrote in the email. She did not immediately respond to requests for comment from the Associated Press. Alfonsi said in the email that the interviews were sought with or questions directed to, sometimes both, the White House, State Department, and Department of Homeland Security. And that is all the time I have for today. My name is Billy, and I've been reading you the Lynn Daily Item for the Talking Information Center. Have a wonderful day, and thank you for listening.